Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Hey folks, it's time to get together with friends up north. Actually, just one friend. That's all I really deserve today. Kirk Bangstad of the Minocqua Brewing Company and the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC joins us from Lake Minocqua. Chris Lyerly will join us in our next hour. How you doing, friend?
Good to see you, my friend. I miss you, Pat. Yeah. I love this weekly thing we've got going on here. I was telling Luke earlier, it's taken me a little bit of time to figure out how to open the flower, as they say, in the morning hours, as opposed to our nighttime show. Gotta bang my head against the wall a few times.
Well, that's why we typically put it at 10 o'clock, to give you every possible advantage to get up. But for reasons behind the scenes, we're actually doing shows at with you at 9 and 10 this morning. So I appreciate your willingness to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed after what I'm sure was a busy final weekend of the Tap House up in Minocqua over the weekend before, like everything else up north, kind of shutting things down for the winter.
Yeah, I mean, the weather gets cruddy. Everybody's battening down the hatches and going back to their first homes as opposed to their second homes. About 50% of the population of Minocqua in the summer is from Illinois or Madison or Milwaukee. So there's not a whole lot of business to be had up there. So, yeah, we close everything down. We're going to be focusing on just selling beer at all the stores in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Illinois. And we're going to be battling the town so we can have a little bit of a beer garden next spring.
I was going to say, I don't know what you'll do if that parking lot issue gets resolved. I mean, you'll be bored, but I don't doubt that the Old Boys Network of Minocqua will find something else to keep you occupied just because you are the charming person that you are. Pollster Jill Normington will be joining us shortly. Her clients have included Alex Lazary and Senator Tammy Baldwin. And we'll talk about polling in Wisconsin, the challenges of doing such, and what people should really keep in mind when we talk about polling in any way, shape, or form. It's, you know, it's there's really some good tips and advice to follow in making choices. And Kirk, speaking of those choices, we have spoken frequently and we spent all of the last hour talking about extreme right wingers, those who encourage or participate in insurrections, or like Derek Van Orden, or insurrection adjacent, as I like to say. In the last segment, we talked about Fred Prehn being what I think can charitably be described as a jerk face and staying on the Natural Resources Board, even though his term has expired for real low life reasons that came out in some text messages. And all of that, that alone would make people like you and me, you know, unhappy, sad, disappointed about, you know, where America's going. But what really rubs salt in the wound is that you and I have, I think, what can fairly be called many friends who either consistently or most of the time vote Republican, who are normal, good, respectful people that we can have some disagreements with. But at no point would they strike you as somebody that would support, I don't know, fascism. And, you know, we wonder, where have the moderate Republicans gone?
Yeah, I thought about this a lot when I was I supported a Republican candidate in the primary for the 7th Congressional District, because I was like, I don't agree with Republicans, but the policies, but the districts have been gerrymandered so much, and we have such right wing people representing us up here. Tom Tiffany being one who was part and parcel of the insurrection. That I was like, well, we have to try to find people who are willing to respect our institutions, respect our natural resources, and are not just the rubber stamps for like the pollution lobby. So that led me to you know, if ever I think about something ad nauseum or too much, I generally make a beer can label out of it. So we just came out a couple days ago with this thing called the Extinct Elephant, a moderate red ale. And it's pretty self-explanatory. It's for all those moderate Republicans who have been left by their own party, because and the Republic or the politicians are no longer moderate because they do the bidding of the pollution lobby and whoever's telling them what to do, Robin Voss. But the rank and file, a lot of them are still moderate, and that's what Biden was talking about a couple weeks ago after he got lambasted for being divisive, even though that wasn't the case. There are a lot of moderate Republicans out there, and that's why I made a beer for him.
And that was very nice. And again, done with the right intentions here of trying to, again, as we say often on this program, just encourage more conversations and to let people know that, you know, we want to have their backs. If they want to put country ahead of party, and if they want to feel like, you know, there are people who would do the same if the shoe was on the other foot, you know, that they've got somebody they can hoist an extinct elephant red ale with.
There's so many opportunities to talk about what we really need to do in Wisconsin. You know, the things that all these politicians for 10 years have been talking about, like accept Medicaid. You know, it's all these old issues that have never been resolved because the Republican Party refuses to govern.
Can you just imagine how, you know, where we'd be right now if we could take some of these things off the table after all these years, like the Medicaid expansion and such? I mean, it boggles the imagination how much more we could be doing. But in the meantime, the only way to get there is for some people to change their habits come election time. And as we try to measure whether people are changing their habits, we need professional pollsters. And one of them, Jill Normington, joins us next, along with Kirk Bangsted. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
Won't you let me die happy? That sunny feel kind of warm. She looking through a crystal ball. She said, you're in love. I said, how couldn't that be so? I'm not catching with the girls I know. She said, when the next one arrives, you'll be looking.
You don't typically listen when Kirk joins us on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. You know that for all the care that he puts into crafting ingredients for his beers, he puts into picking music for his appearances as well. So by choosing the Hard Times from Fortune Teller, we are ready to talk about polling in Wisconsin. And Kirk, tell us why you wanted that to be a subject this week.
I mean, let's be honest. It's not telling fortunes. There is a science behind polling, and Jill is going to tell us all about it. But I wanted to talk about this week because we're seeing one poll after the next from, you know, it's the Republicans have their pollsters and they have their media. And so they're saying that, you know, Johnson and Evers are, you know, one percentage point ahead. And then there's pollsters coming out of Marquette and, you know, and there's polls everywhere. Every poll in Wisconsin is almost neck and neck with these two big races. And those are the ones that I'm following with the Super PAC. So that's the ones. I don't know about some of the others, but it just seems to me that every single election season we have this horse race that especially in Wisconsin, because we're such a purple state. And I was like, how much attention should we be paying? And I've written about this. How much attention should we be paying to polls when a lot of the issues being talked about in the polls have been, you know, have been millions of dollars have been spent to make voters in Wisconsin pay attention to those issues. And so I'm so excited to talk to Jill Normington because, you know, she's been doing this in Wisconsin for a long time. She's on the progressive side. It seems like, I think when you're a pollster, it seems like you have to kind of go to one side or the other at some point. I'm not sure. But Jill, thanks so much for joining us. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about your history in polling in Wisconsin and maybe some of the pitfalls about Wisconsin versus other states in how hard it is to poll?
Sure. Well, I've been a pollster for a long time. My first race in Wisconsin was where I was not the lead. I was the junior analyst on the race that the senior partner in the firm was working for Jerry Klutschka. So It's been a while that I've been doing work in Wisconsin. If that name rings bells for people, Jerry hasn't been around for a while.
Yes, it does. So more than 20 years experience in survey research and campaign strategy. Now with Normington Pets and Associates. Pollster.
Yeah, Senator, I got my name on the door after a while.
That's right. As well it should be. You know, there's a reason this show's now called Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, because whoever comes in next, it's going to be really awkward for them to have a show with that title. But, you know, you've had Alex Lazary as a client most recently, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Your clients have included Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, Angie Craig from Minnesota. So you have this national experience, but a Wisconsin base. And so, you know, to Kirk's question, talk to us just a little bit about, in this day and age, what is the most challenging thing about trying to gauge public opinion in Wisconsin at this point in time?
I actually think, Kirk, that you hit the nail on the head. The thing that is, you know, the science of why we can call 800 people, you know, to represent millions of people, it's predicated on the idea that the 800 people that you're talking to are representative of the millions of people who, you know, they're literally supposed to represent. And the thing that people talk about the least is that the math that is behind polling is actually at its most accurate at the extremes. So what I mean by that is, if you get something back and it's an 80-20 kind of proposition, the confidence interval for that is actually higher than when you get something back that's at a 50-50 sort of proposition. And we have not been part of very many statewide elections in Wisconsin in maybe the last 30 years that weren't pretty close to that 50-50 proposition. So the math that undergirds polling is actually at its least accurate when things are the closest, when they're the closest to 50-50, which is frustrating. And that's not a Wisconsin problem. It's an everywhere problem, but it's particularly prevalent in Wisconsin, where so many races are so close to a 50-50 proposition.
So the question I have is, I know that there's two questions I have. First of all, you know, my business is run on Facebook. You know, I have an echo chamber, you know, where I don't really want to hear the opposition, because I am actually the one creating the content to try to convince people to be more progressive. And so I have 66,000 people, you know, that are listening to me on Facebook. And I know that, you know, I'm not watching the news as much anymore. I'm looking at my Facebook page and seeing the articles that are coming through. So I know that I'm in a progressive echo chamber. And I can just imagine that people that are conservative are in their conservative echo chamber. So when I see that crime and inflation are just as high of issues as shoring up our democracy and pro, you know, being pro-choice, to me, that's not necessarily 1, 2, 3, 4 in order of importance. Those are the top two issues for progressives is, or at least in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, but the top two issues for progressives is saving our democracy and getting women's rights back. Those are the top two, but the top two for conservatives are inflation, potentially immigration, and crime, because they've been told that that's important in their echo chambers. So when I see a poll that says these four issues are the top issues, I don't really believe that, because I believe that the sample is completely different. If the first question you ask, are you conservative or are you a progressive? As soon as that happens, these people no longer are representative of everybody, right?
Well, I mean, progressives and conservatives actually exist in the real world. You can't have a real poll without, you know, some of each. Otherwise, you're not adequately representing the electorate as well. But, you know, what you're talking about, one of the best examples that I can think of is that before 9/11. So very important line of demarcation. Throughout the early part of 2001, you know, we were preparing as Democrats to have a really good midterm election. And one of the things that we knew was going to be a key issue was the second that George W. Bush came out and said, we're going to reform Social Security. Social Security went from being like a 3% issue for people to being like a 35% issue. Like overnight, the president used his bully pulpit to declare that Social Security reform was an issue that people should care about. And so we do the same thing through earned media. We do the same thing through paid advertising, that in some ways, you know, we tell the voters what the issues are that they should be thinking about. In very specific ways. So it's not that people don't have other concerns. It's not that they don't say other things. It's not that some people in polls don't say, I really want somebody to work on public schools, or it's not that people in polls don't say, you know, I really want someone to work on, you know, reducing taxes, because those are always there. But You are correct in which, you know, when you see millions of dollars worth of advertising telling you that crime is out of control, it becomes very easy then to repeat back to someone on the phone or online that's an issue that's important to you. So it's not a pure question of what the voters themselves bring. It's often a reflection of the environment in which they live, but that's not wrong. They are thinking about those issues. Those issues are important to them, but you're right in thinking that maybe it's not the most organic thought, that maybe sometimes those thoughts come from external sources.
You know, when you talk about 9/11, which is now 21 years ago, hard to believe, but the changes in technology since then, the number of landlines that have gone away, which feels like near 100%. The challenge for polling when people have moved on to cell phones, and actually before that, it was just caller ID that people could see if it was somebody they knew or not. So can you take a couple of minutes here? And if we have to interrupt you for commercial break, we will, then we'll get the rest of your response. But over these next 3 minutes, the challenges or adjustments you've made in the move to cell phones and caller ID. And then if time allows, we'll get into taking polls via the internet as well and yep, the differences there. But talk first about how much tougher I would think that it is these days.
It's ridiculously more difficult than it used to be. You know, we used to complain about response rates that were in the 20s and talk about the death of polling because only, you know, 20% of the people would talk to us. We're now in a situation where we're talking about less than 4% of the people will talk to us. So it's ridiculously difficult to have these conversations with people. I do want to say that technology is both a blessing and a curse when it comes to polling, because it allows us to innovate. The cell phone issue became a problem in the 2008 election cycle when, you know, we're talking about maybe one in three households in 2008 were cell phone only. It's more like 75, 80% of households are mobile phone only. And initially, the kinds of people in 2008 who were cell phone only were very, very different than the overall population. They were really young. They were a lot more progressive than the overall electorate. And part of the reason why, and people forget this, the biggest polling miss error in all of polling was in 2008. But people forget because we got the winner right. We just didn't get the winner right by anywhere close to the margin that Barack Obama ended up winning by in many places, because cell phones were not really a part of what many pollsters were doing. And so we were missing, but we got the winner right. And so nobody remembers that 2008 was the biggest polling miss basically ever.
Well, and that's just it. It's not just a matter of picking or you know, seeing, you know, what comes out on top, a candidate or a response, what have you, you know, but also those margins. And like you said, so much of it is built on, you know, finding that right sample size. And so we'll talk more about the challenges of that, and we'll get a bit more specific about this year's campaigns and races with pollster Jill Normington when we come back from this break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Go for it.
I've only ever thought that Que Sera Sera was done by Doris Day. Little did I know until Kirk notified me of this clip this morning that Sly and the Family Stone did a version of Que Sera Sera, whatever
well,
will be.
Somehow I screwed up. I was on a plane yesterday. Somehow I screwed up so the good chorus didn't end up in there. But I felt with our awesome pollster, Jill Normington, joining us for these two segments, we would talk about fortune telling in the first one, and then we would talk about whatever will be in the second one. So
that was a much cooler version than Doris Day.
Well, you know, old people can agree to disagree on this one. Jill Normington is a partner with Normington Pets and Associates, pollster for Senator Tammy Baldwin, and a host of other clients. We were talking right before the break about the changes in polling and technology. And Jill, I have in my mind that those scenes from The West Wing, where you'd give a State of the Union speech and like a Gallup poll or whatever, you'd have the results like 2 hours later, because you called a bunch of people. They all saw the speech because there was only three channels. Everybody had a landline and you could get a thorough poll right away. That's got to sound like a pipe dream to you these days with the fractured media and technology.
Well, I will say that if you do want to, you know, see what went well for the State of the Union, the great thing about that is you know when it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So at least you can prepare for it. So you actually can get immediate results from something like the State of the Union because you can plan for it. You can get 200 pre-recruited people in a room and dial test the hell out of that speech. So gotcha. You can actually, that is actually possible. But something happens in the real world and you want to get an immediate reaction. There is no more, you know, 2 hours for that to be there. I wish things were, you know, like on The West Wing, because then I'd be Marla Matlin. That's my character on The West Wing. She's the pollster.
There you go. That's right.
But it's, you know, it's not like that in real life. I think a lot of people think that we haven't really adapted to the way that real life is anymore, and polling evolves every single cycle, from the inclusion of cell phones, which I will tell you that I don't think I've done a poll in over a decade that wasn't more than 50% cell phones. And nobody really should be doing that anymore either. Otherwise, to my earlier point about being representative, it won't be. But probably the biggest change, the biggest innovation in polling in the last 10 years is the ability to contact people on their mobile phones via text. There are a couple of kind of innovative things out there where you can take the entire survey via text if it's short enough. And what I mean by that is you're pressing 1, 2, 3, 4 or yes, no, on your phone to respond to the actual questions. But the thing that's a little bit more common is a solicitation to participate in a survey And the solicitation is done via text. Hey, Kirk, you know, do you want to share your opinions about, you know, current events in Wisconsin? You get a text from there. And if you're any good, you disclose who the calling house or research company is so that the voters can see for themselves that it's a legitimate survey and not, you know, some piece of garbage designed to collect all of their personal information. And then many people are then taking that survey via an online platform. So it's the exact same questions that the people on the phone here read to them, but instead you're reading it for yourself and answering via a web platform. So that's the shorthand for that is like SMS to web or text to web. And that is, it is completely changing the way that many pollsters gather information. One of the things that we learned from the 2020 election cycle was that the surveys that use a hybrid methodology, so live phone interviewers, both on mobile phones and landlines, combined with some other form of online interviewing, whether that be from an online panel or this SMS to web that I just described, were far more accurate than either one of those methodologies alone.
Got it. Okay, so this is going to be a long-winded question. But I read this Washington Post article a couple days ago, Perry Bacon, who said what polling is good for and what it's not good for. What he said it's not good for is calling races in swing states like Wisconsin. I believe that, I think I read like 538, which is this aggregate of polls that Biden was predicted to win by 8 points in Wisconsin in 2020. He won by 20,000 votes. That's less than 1 point. So in Wisconsin, I think they were off. The pollsters were off in Wisconsin more than almost every other state in the union. Maybe that I'm wrong about that, but it's close. So polls shouldn't be used to call the results of swing states. And this is also, and they shouldn't be used to decide what's important issues in society. And the reason I say this is my own background is I was a management consultant. I was a marketing management consultant for Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Oracle before I got into the beer making business. And these huge companies would hire my firm to try to figure out what customers wanted in terms of technology. Now, that was the hardest job ever because customers don't spend all day thinking, like people who use technology don't spend all day thinking about what's the next best thing that's going to make my life easier. So when they hired us to figure this out and we would do panels and surveys, and I was young and I didn't know any better, and I'm not really a scientist or a pollster, I was like, this job doesn't make any sense. Like, we can't ask people what they want. You need to have creative people at these tech companies actually figuring out what people want and then convincing them that they want it. So polling doesn't seemingly tell people what the most important issue is. On the flip side, seemingly what polling does do, and this is what I read in the article, and I'm not telling you this, you know all this, but I wanted your thoughts. What polling does do is tell people when politicians are way off from what the normal person wants. And this was, let's get back, like Kansas and reproductive rights. We have the Republican Party, and we have a Supreme Court that has just overturned Roe, and it seems like something like 70-80% of Americans think that, you know, like abortion should not be illegal in all cases, you know, and that's like, and Kansas, which is one of the most conservative states in the union, they had a vote on this statewide, and they said, you know, that we're not going to make abortion illegal, and the polling was right on that. So I guess the question is, you know, what in your mind should we be focused on as voters in Wisconsin for what polls should tell us versus what I'd hate is the horse race that, you know, that the politicians use to say I'm winning, so that means I'm, you know, vote for me.
I was on a panel honestly, time has no meaning for me anymore, but I think it was a couple of weeks ago, talking to the Milwaukee Chamber of Commerce. It was me and a Republican pollster. And one of the most interesting things to me is that pollsters, it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, we basically all agree that our product is the most misused product in all of politics. A poll is actually not designed to be a predictive instrument. I'm going to say that, like, for you again, so that people really understand, a poll is not designed to be a predictive instrument. And campaigns themselves do not use polls in that way. Polls are an information source to make decisions. That is what they're used for inside of campaigns. Should we be, you know, emphasizing this part of who you are or this other part of who you are? Should we be talking more about our own ideas, or should we be contrasting ourselves more with our opponent? Which thing puts us in the better position to be successful and win this election? So they're misused all of the time. And the most important way that polls are misused are exactly in the way in which you're talking about. What I mean by that is, we constantly talk about polls in terms of the margin. So there would be a poll that would have Joe Biden ahead 49 to 41. And they would say, oh, that's an 8-point Biden victory. Well, it's not. Because there's a whole bunch of people who haven't made up their mind yet. And you actually have a poll with a whole bunch of information to tell you who those people are. I'm going to guess that if you had actually examined the people who are undecided in each one of those polls, you would never have thought to yourself, oh, these people are for sure going to break 50% for Joe Biden and 50% for Donald Trump. You could have seen from who they are, what their ideology was, where they live, what they thought about the two candidates. You probably could have predicted how those undecided voters were going to break in a much more accurate fashion. Because I've never been a part of an election where I looked at the undecideds and thought to myself, oh, yeah, both candidates are for sure going to divide these undecideds up in half and the margin is going to stay the margin. That's almost never the
There's a reason there's that much data involved, is to look well beyond
beyond the top lines. Absolutely.
We are joined by Jill Normington, pollster here for Senator Tammy Baldwin and others. And here's one way I want to take that same question. When we talk about a purple state or a close race, however you want to phrase it, I always wonder how much of that margin, that deciding margin, is people that we would refer to as actual swing voters, independent, moderate. They are just almost as likely to vote either way. How much of it is that those people break one way or the other, versus people who lean Democratic or lean Republican who decide not to vote that year? They stay home. Is the difference maker people who could go either way, or is the difference maker voters who decide they're not going to participate in this election? Do the numbers give us any insight into that?
Composition of the electorate is in many ways determinative of outcome. It is one of the reasons why, when we have conversations about elections, we have conversations not only about persuading, about taking people who are either undecided or with one candidate and trying to persuade them to change their mind. But we also have huge conversations about turnout and how hard you're working to take people who might sit out a midterm election like this one is, who would normally participate in a presidential election. And in a state like Wisconsin, that, as you said, is often decided by, you know, 20,000 votes, you know, something as simple as, you know, what the weather is like on election day, especially in a place like Wisconsin, where same day registration is a real thing, where hundreds of thousands of people who were not 100% certain, you know, whether they're coming or not, right, you know, takes place. Something as simple as that can swing the outcome of an election.
So fickle. We're getting to the word fickle. That's what we are here in Wisconsin and in other places. Jill, we really appreciate what we've been able to learn from you thus far, and you know, really respect what you do. We really provide or appreciate the background on this, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me and Kirk this morning.
Absolutely, it was my pleasure.
All right, we will take this break and be back with more after this. You're up north. Have you sing these things, and so you enjoy the songs so much. Coming up in our next hour,
Pat, it's because the
yes,
it's because this next segment we're going to talk about all these issues coming out of thin air, like critical race theory. And so I just typed in thin air on Songs About Thin Air, and I got Aladdin from Disney, and I was like, this is amazing.
Kirk impressed by Google searches. This is coming up in our next hour. Dr. Kristen Lierley, briefly, and then at the bottom of the next hour, State Representative Evan Goyke. But yeah, things that come out of thin air. We talked a lot about this on yesterday's show about how crime has magically become an issue. The tens of thousands of commercials that have aired as a result. Again, because when you have no real solutions, you have to go for fear tactics. And, you know, prior to that, it was critical race theory. And by the way, prior to that, it was late term abortions. But now they know they can't use that issue. And again, when you don't have ideas, you turn to fear.
So, yeah. So we just and this is what got me thinking about polling a couple weeks ago when I kind of write like my weekly essay. And so we had Jill Normington on, who is Alex Lazary's pollster, Tammy Baldwin's pollster. She's been polling in Wisconsin for 20 years. She said her job is her polls are misused by politicians all the time to tell people whether or not they're going to win an election or not, to get more money for their campaigns, you know, to get more volunteers. They're misused. They shouldn't be the deciders of outcomes. And the worst part about polls is that they're more of they look backwards instead of forwards. Mm-hmm. So when you do a poll and you ask the voters of Wisconsin an issue like, do you think teaching critical race theory in schools is bad or good? You know, that's a question you're going to get in a Republican poll. Like, you're only going to get that question after millions of dollars of dark money has been spent, or all Republicans from the U.S. Senate to the House to our Assembly, State Assembly, have all been told to talk about critical race theory by the strategists who are like, we're going to create this issue to scare voters and to potentially flip school boards and make them political. All that information then gets into the brains of Wisconsin voters because it's a concerted effort to get in the brains of Wisconsin voters. And so you do a poll and you say, is critical race theory dangerous? Wisconsin voters are going to be like, oh, yeah, it's super dangerous, because they've been hearing that it's dangerous for, you know, for a month, like ad nauseum. And so it's psychological warfare. That if you repeat a message long enough, people will accept it as true. And it's scary because it's being used on Wisconsin voters, mostly by conservatives in the Republican Party. I'm not saying it's not used by Democrats, but it's been mastered by the right.
Well, and if anything, and you know, again, there's still just under 6 weeks left in the campaign. But if you were a consultant, if you were advising Democrats, I think one of the messages usually the strategy is not to take the bait from the other side, stick to your own message. But if you were going to respond to something like this, heaven knows there's enough fodder already. And we talked a bit about this yesterday, that the people who are trying to scare you about crime right now haven't lifted a finger about gun violence. As I was reading, you know, yesterday from somebody, their five-year-old had their first active shooter drill, you know, as a kindergartner, came home crying, sobbing, promising to be good so that nobody would hurt them and that, you know, he'll hide really good, mommy. And you just wish every Republican who has blocked any effort to solve the gun crisis in America could do something about those children, because they sure as hell haven't done anything about all the children and adults who've been cut down by crime up until now. Fear-mongering is all they got. If they wanted to propose something other than lock them up, that's always the proposal that's out there, you know, and more cops on the streets. But if they had actual solutions to crime, I think they would have shared them by now, but they don't.
Yeah. And not even, I mean, we could, let's, so you're talking about projection and deflection, Pat, that's what they use, fear tactics, but it's deflecting against the fact that they're not offering any solutions themselves, or that even more than not dealing with the gun issue, folks like Ron Johnson and the slate of Republican state senators and assemblymen have not allocated enough resources to municipalities. They say they're cutting taxes for the middle class. Mainly they're cutting taxes for the rich, but that money that they're cutting is not going, or just reallocated to the state and not to municipalities. It's not going to police and fire. It's also not going to mental health services, which would also help reduce crime. So the aspect of crime, talking about crime, they're not only wrong on crime, and we can point to how they've done things to actually increase crime, but it's also a deflection of, let's talk about Ron Johnson. He was criminally, repeating of the big lie to potentially help overthrow our country, arguably was criminal. You know, I think, you know, Robin Voss has been subpoenaed because he was talking with Trump about ways to overturn the election in Wisconsin. That's potentially criminal. So there's projection there as well as deflection. There's also projection of, let's talk about crime. Let's accuse the Democrats of being bad on crime when we're actually doing criminal things.
Right. I mean, it starts. I mentioned gun violence. You mentioned, you know, who's actually defunding the police. It's the party of austerity. Mental health services, which would involve resources that currently go to sending an armed cop to every situation when it doesn't need it. So they've taken the wrong approach there. Of course, you could talk about the root causes of crime, having done nothing in the way of, you know, job creation, actual job creation, or in supporting the education and training that leads to jobs, which fights crime. All of these things are useful public policy. But again, you have to get out of campaign mode long enough to care enough to actually work on policy that way, when frankly, the only policy proposals we've seen are about how they can further rig elections, how they can further restrict voting. In other words, how they can stay in power and continue to do nothing. In our next hour, we will talk to State Representative Evan Goyke, and we will visit briefly with Dr. Kristen Lyerly as well. And Kirk Bankstead will hang around if he promises to sing more of the bumper music. We'll be back after our break at the top of the hour. You're up north.
And you'll finally learn you don't come out of